You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
All right, David and Goliath. This is a story from 3,000 years ago, one of the most well-known stories in the Bible. You hear these names, about every March on that glorious weekend in the middle of March when college basketball reaches its pinnacle and the madness is upon us. And you'll have some 14 seed defeat a 3 seed, and you'll see headlines like these. David downs Goliath. Number 16 stuns number 1 Purdue in historic upset. Or just David 43, Goliath 41. You'll see these victories, and makes you wonder, who are David and Goliath? Well, tonight we get the origin story. We get the original. Where these came from, a story that's 3,000 years old, that's found in the pages of the history of ancient Israel. And what we will see is that David and Goliath is not some metaphor for the little guy rising up against the establishment. No, it's actually a story about the power of God to supply weak people with everything they need to gain the victory. And some of us, we've got some challenges in our lives, we've got some battles in our lives, we've got some giants in our lives. And we hope to learn from this story some things that God has for us, some things from David about how to fight the battles God's way. We start in 1 Samuel 17, verse 1. The Philistines now mustered their army for battle and camped between Socoh in Judah and Azekah. The Philistines were the enemies of the Israelites. They had kept them sort of under their thumb. They were constantly attacking them and harming them. And it says, Saul countered by gathering his Israelite troops near the valley of Elah. Now, Saul, you remember, we've been reading about this character. He still bears the title King of Israel. He still leads the army, yet God has already chosen his replacement, a guy named David, who we met last week and whose first battle we will see this week, his first real test, his public coming out party, if you will. And we see a lot of place names here. The Valley of Elah is where they're gathered. It says the Philistines and Israelites were camping on opposite hills with the valley between them. One of the great things about the Bible is we can find these places. This is not set in a galaxy far, far away, but it's set in actual geography and real history. The Valley of Elah, the Philistines and the Israelites would have been camped on opposite hills across from this valley. There's actually a major east-west passageway through the mountains of Judea that was a major road back then. It's a road today. And this would have been an important point to hold. If you could hold both sides of this hill, then you could control that road. And that would have been very important. You can also, if you follow the mountains where Israel is, all the way back to the east, you can basically keep the high ground all the way back to Jerusalem and Bethlehem. Whereas the Philistines, they could keep the high ground all the way down to the coastal plains where they controlled. And so both could march out with keeping their strategic kind of position. And yet nobody wanted to go down into the valley and give up the high ground because it's pretty hard to attack uphill. These hills were several hundred feet tall, so it'd be like attacking going up a mountain. Here's another shot with some drone footage. Again, Israel and the Philistines. I don't know if you can see from this picture here, but there is a stream that is on the Israel side of the valley that runs right along the base of their mountain. This stream is going to become kind of important later on in this story. It's also kind of important that it was on the Israel side of the valley. There you can see another shot of the stream. Here's a close-up. Despite every tourist to Israel taking 5 smooth stones from the stream, it still has plenty of smooth stones left for those who go in the future. Here's another great shot. This is actually pretty fertile farmland today, but you can just see how tall these mountains were and how long this valley is. It's a half a mile plus a strenuous climb up. And so they would have been camped on both sides, and this is what it would have looked like if you were standing in the valley looking up at where the Israelites were camped for the scene that we will see tonight. Well, the Israelites, as they're standing there, they're getting ready for battle, they're putting on their face paint, they got AC/DC playing, they got ankle tape, you know. Powder for their hands, right? All of a sudden, they see something they hadn't seen before. Instead of the entire Philistine army coming down, they see a lone figure making his way down the hill and across the valley. This would have taken, 5 minutes, 10 minutes to watch this figure climb down the hill and across the valley. And it says, Goliath, a Philistine champion from Gath, came out of the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. Now, some manuscripts say 6 feet tall, which would have been pretty tall for back then. The better manuscripts say 9 feet tall. We do see 9 feet tall, even people who are almost 9 feet tall in our modern day. There have been cases of that. This is not absurd. This is not crazy that something like this could have happened. And he would have not have been a skinny 9 feet. This would have been a thick, muscular 9 feet tall. This is like a sequoia, you know. This would have been tree trunk legs and bulging boulders for biceps. And so Israel sees this giant, this battle-hardened warrior coming across, and they're terrified. He wore a bronze helmet. His armor alone weighed 125 pounds. He must have been 400 pounds just to carry the 150 plus pounds of gear. So you know, you would have heard this boom, boom, boom as he crossed the valley. And they're looking at their glass of water and they can see it like jolting every time he steps on the ground. Boom. We read, the shaft of his spear was as heavy and thick as a weaver's beam. You're like, what's a weaver's beam? I don't know, but it sounds pretty thick. And if you think his shaft is thick, look at the head, tipped with an iron spearhead that weighed 15 pounds. Good Lord. All the latest armor from the late Iron Age and even some iron armor here. Goliath stood and shouted a taunt to the Israelites in this natural amphitheater. Why are you all coming out to fight? Choose one man to come down here and fight me. If he kills me, we will be your slaves. But if I kill him, you will be our slaves. I defy the armies of Israel today. Okay, the Philistines, they actually came down from Greece. And this looks like something you'd read in like Homer, right? This is like the single champion coming out to fight for the army. And so he proposes this to Israel, and they don't know what to do with it. They're terrified. They have a giant problem. Morning and evening, day after day, 40 days, they had to withstand this taunting 80 consecutive times. From this huge giant. You know, Saul was supposed to be this tall guy to fight their battles for him. He's the only other tall guy mentioned in Scripture. He won't go out and fight. And so they sit here humiliated by their enemies and they don't know what to do about it. Feels like this hopeless, insurmountable obstacle. And I wonder if some of us have some giant problems in our lives as well. You know, maybe there's giant people in our lives. We've got a boss. We don't know what to do with them. We're at our wit's end. A professor. A family member really giving us a hard time, and we feel like this has been going for so long, I don't know what to do about this. Maybe a boyfriend or a girlfriend. Maybe there's just a critic in our lives, and we've tried everything. We don't know what to do. It's wearing us down, and for many of us here, we're trying to serve God in the midst of this, and we feel completely overwhelmed. How am I going to hang in here when I have to deal with this? And it feels like it's going morning and evening, day after day. There's maybe giant challenges in our lives as well. Maybe some of us just have so many demands on our time, we don't know how we're going to do it all. We don't know how we're going to fit it all together. We've got financial difficulties that we literally don't know what we're going to do. And we're reaching the end. We're reaching the deadline when something has to be done. We've got mental health issues that we're facing, and they continue to weigh us down and take us out. We've got physical issues, disabilities, and illness. Maybe some of us are facing a recent medical diagnosis and we don't know what we're going to do about it in ourselves or in another, someone we love. And we've got these huge challenges. And meanwhile, like I said, some of us were trying to serve God in the midst of this and we just feel like, I don't know how this is going to work. And we feel hopeless, we feel defeated, and we don't know what we're going to do and we're ready to give up. Well, these guys were terrified and they had a giant problem. And I think we may find some things here that will be helpful for us in dealing with the huge things in our lives, the overwhelming things in our lives. Well, this act ends with Saul and the Israelites terrified and deeply shaken. They're all sitting there trembling with their tail between their legs. They don't know what they're going to do about this giant. And it sure seems like defeat is certain. And the curtain closes. And it reopens in a very different scene. Now, David was the son of a man named Jesse. We met him last week. He was a teenage boy, 15, 16 years old. You know, this is like still going through puberty, like hasn't quite grown into his feet yet, kind of like stage that boys go through at that point in their lives. maybe can't even really grow a beard yet. And it says he was the youngest son, youngest of eight, we learned last week. And his three oldest brothers, they were off with the army. But here he was. Remember last week, he had been anointed as king, and yet he goes back to his life of obscurity. In fact, David was going back and forth between the battle and Bethlehem so that he could help with the sheep. Here we have, he's been anointed king, and yet the anointed king is still doing the menial task of out in the fields watching the sheep. Is that something you would do? Would you be like, hey, I deserve better than this. I've been anointed king. David, he was willing to serve in whatever way he needed to, serve in humble, behind-the-scenes ways. And this is, I think, partly why he was so well prepared for the spiritual leadership God had for him. But the anointed king, he's still watching sheep. And I think David probably knew this was unseen training for much bigger things. You see, the things that God is doing in your life, God does not waste any time. He does not waste any trial that comes into your life. But he's always doing something in your life now where he's trying to prepare you for the next thing he has for you. And that will be preparation for the next thing he has for you. And God is always shaping those who are willing to respond. Do you view the trials in your life that way? Do you view the small, hidden times of service that way? David was out here in the fields. This was his seminary. This was his basic training. This is where he would lie out in the fields and think about the scriptures, meditate on the scriptures. He would write poems to God that later became scripture. He would sit and look up at the stars as the heavens declare the glory of God. We read later about David defending his sheep, going after a lion has a sheep in his mouth, and he goes after that lion as an act of faith. God tells him to go in, and he defeats a lion by the power of God. David, out there in the fields, being prepared by God for much bigger things. And we see David out there. And there are these times in our lives where it feels like nothing's happening. There are times in our lives where we feel like no one sees, no one cares, but God sees. God sees it all. And God is actively at work in your life. You have to trust him, and you need to make the most of these hidden times, because this is going to be important for what David is going to do later in this chapter. For every day he spent fighting Goliath, he spent 1,000 in the hills outside of Bethlehem, caring for the sheep, doing the thankless job, and God growing his faith. Well, one day Jesse said to David, take this basket of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread and carry them quickly to your brothers. So they had to supply food for the troops on the front line. So his brothers, they're in the game, learning the playbook. David's like the water boy, okay? He's like the menial. He's like the delivery guy. But he's happy to do this as well. And so early the next morning, he leaves the sheep with another shepherd and sets out with the gifts as Jesse had directed him. David woke up that morning not knowing that this would become one of the biggest days of his life and would become one of the most well-loved and well-known stories in the entire Bible. And remember, the chapter hasn't been written yet. David has not read the chapter. He doesn't walk in and be like, oh, I love this story. This is the David and Goliath one. No, this would have been terrifying. He had no idea what was next. He was just stepping in and stepping forward as God called him forward. And, you know, there's a lot of chapters in our lives that are not written yet either. And times God will call us into. And in hindsight, it will look so simple and easy. But at the time, it often doesn't look that way. It's scary. You got to hang in there and trust God. Well, he arrives at the camp just as the Israelite army was leaving for the battlefield with shouts and battle cries. Soon the Israelite and Philistine forces stood facing each other, army against army, each one perched on their hill, no one willing to go down and give up the high ground. And David, it says, hurried out to the ranks to greet his brothers. So he's there on top of that hill, talking with his brothers, hearing about the battle. And it says as he was talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, came out from the Philistine ranks. This is day 41, apparently. He comes out to do his usual taunting to the army of Israel. And as soon as the Israelite army saw him, they began to run away in fright. They withdrew from the giant, once again terrified. Their spirit is broken. Have you seen the giant? He comes out each day to defy Israel. The king has offered a huge reward to anyone who kills him. He will give that man one of his daughters for a wife, and the man's entire family will be exempted from paying taxes. Okay, this is Saul's motivational tactic here. He's like, tax exemptions. Who's going down? Who's going to go fight the giant? He's an unspiritual leader. He's using unspiritual methods. He won't step out and lead. He won't step out and take risks. And so he's just trying to motivate people the way that he might be motivated. What's missing here is anything about God, any sort of vertical perspective, anything about the power of God, the reputation of God. And that's just not the way Saul thinks, apparently. David, on the other hand, does. David hears what the people are saying. And he asks the soldier, say, wait a minute. What will a man get for killing this Philistine and ending his defiance of Israel? He's like, tax breaks? The real question is this. Who is this pagan Philistine that he's allowed to defy the armies of the living God? That's what I want to know. David sees right through it all. He asks an innocent question that is, it's not just a rebuke of the Philistine taunt. It's a rebuke of every single person who's been sitting there for 80 straight taunts, doing nothing about it, and not trusting God, and not allowing God to work through them. This question, you know, what it really shows is this. David only sees one giant in this situation. David sees God, and he's like, who's this pipsqueak defying our giant? He sees God as so much bigger than any human foe that he is able to see right through all of the fear, all of the trembling, all of the anxiety. Sometimes you get these systems where everybody's worried and everybody's anxious, and it takes a single person of faith to cut through the anxiety, to cut through the unbelief, and to point people back to God. It's like everybody is, their head is stuck in this plane, and David goes, hey guys, boop. Let's look at God. Let's think about the promises of God. This is something he had experience doing. In fact, out in the field, he would have maybe been exempt from this anxious system that was just swirling around people that were connected to Saul. David only sees one giant here. It's the living God. The God who is the leader of the armies. You know, he says the armies of the living God. You know, if they could have seen the armies of God, if they could have seen the power of God, they wouldn't have been afraid of that little giant either. He also sees who they're really defying. He's like, yes, he's attacking us. He's attacking the people of God, but he's really attacking God. And the truth is that God takes it personally when people attack his people. God takes it personally. So know that if you belong to God through Jesus Christ, because of what Christ has done, that an attack on you is like an attack on him. And he does not take that lightly. He feels it, and he cares. As he says in Acts 9, Saul, why are you persecuting me? He felt the blows upon his own people. He felt it personally, and he's there with you in it. Well, David's oldest brother, Eliab, hears David talking. You know, Eliab is the oldest. David was the eighth of eight sons. And so there would have been a big age gap. You know, he would have seen David as a baby. He would have changed David's diaper. He also would have remembered what happened in last chapter, which is that he should have been the one who was anointed the next king. And David passed him up. There must have been a part of him, too, that thinks, maybe this is why David got anointed king and not me, because he seems to have a little more faith. But all that comes out is anger. Anger at David for talking this way, my little brother. What are you doing around here anyway? What about those couple of sheep you're supposed to be taking care of? Isn't there like a sheep emergency right now? I know about your pride and deceit. You just want to see the battle. And so here we see the first battle before the battle. This is where David, he sees what needs to be done, and then someone close to him steps in his way, attacks him, tries to prevent him from getting to what he really needs to do. And this may happen. There may be people close to you that will come after you as you try to step out and take steps of faith. And if that happens, know that you're in good company. Know that you are in company with people like David and Joseph from the Old Testament and Moses. And even Jesus had his own family try to stop him from doing what he was doing in Mark chapter 3. They thought he'd lost his mind. Jesus goes on to say, sometimes if you follow me, a person's enemies will be members of their own household. There will be some friction that comes from following Christ. And so we see this here in David's life. We see the battle before the battle. And if you turn away and you get sidetracked by this one, you're never going to get to the real battle. And so we need to learn how to skillfully navigate these distractions that come up, these attacks that come up, and not allow ourselves to just, you know, David could have responded a lot of wrong ways to this. But let's see how he does respond. He says, "What have I done now? Can't I even speak?" And then he turned away from Eliab. He doesn't let his older brother keep him from doing what he needs to do. The insults, I'm sure they hurt, but he doesn't let them keep him from doing what he needs to do. What does he do? He speaks the truth. He says, "Look, I have not done anything wrong. I am allowed to speak the truth." And then he turns away. He refuses to engage. He refuses to engage. I imagine that part of the reason he's able to do this is because he had developed such a close relationship with God. Those lonely times out in the fields, and what seems to be, I don't know if rejection is the right word from his family, but he sure was overlooked and neglected a little bit. I mean, remember last chapter, he tells Jesse, "Bring all your sons," and he only brings seven, and he leaves David out, even though he is one of his sons. You know, David's able to write, "Even if my father and mother abandon me, Yahweh will hold me close." This is the kind of closeness, the kind of love that you can experience with God. This is the kind of love that you will need if you're going to effectively serve God and if you're going to effectively love other people, because otherwise you'll be pleasing them instead of pleasing God. In other words, you're going to need something from them instead of getting filled up by God so that you have something to give out. If you get pulled into this battle, you'll never make it to the real battle. We have to learn how to navigate these things. We have to learn how to draw close to God, how to speak the truth as appropriate. We need to learn when to turn away as well. And we can get back to that later. Well, David's question is reported to King Saul, and the king sends for him. The king hears someone is willing to fight the war. He's thinking, we must have a mighty warrior in the camp. Send for him at once. And who walks in but teenage David, the harpist? Saul is speechless. David speaks first. "Don't worry about this Philistine, I'll go fight him," David says. The 16-year-old says. "Oh, don't be ridiculous," Saul replies. "Oh my gosh. Oh, you ridiculous child. There's no way you can fight this Philistine. Impossible. I mean, I guess you could fight him, if you want to call it that. It'll be two hits, him hitting you and him you hitting the ground." Saul was all about the dad jokes, okay? "You're only a boy. He's been a man of war since his youth." And here we have the next battle before the battle. The expert. The expert has all kinds of advice as to why you can't do the thing that you are trying to do. All kinds of reasons why it won't work. If he's such an expert, why isn't he out there fighting the Philistine giant if he knows so much about it? He seems to know what can't be done, and he's got a million reasons why you're not going to work. This can be discouraging. Some people turn away at this point. Some people allow others to put limits on them. Really, they're putting limits on God. And David navigates this battle as well. He says, "No, you actually, okay, Goliath's been trained since his youth. So have I. It's been a little different training. It's been in the school of sheep. I've been keeping my father's sheep for a long time. And let me tell you, there are times when a lion or bear would come up, and they would try to take off it with one of my sheep. And he was not having it. I went after it. I struck it. I rescued the sheep from its mouth. And when it turned on me, I grabbed it by its hair and beat it to death." The lion, the bear, boosh, boosh, boosh. And so that's not like easy. That's not like a likely to win kind of scenario. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. Yeah, David's been training for this for his whole life. All of those times out in the field, all of those hidden battles, now they become his experience. He has seen this before. We don't wait until the day of Goliath to try to actually fight. That was Saul's problem. No, we fight the small battles. We have the small things, the small steps of faith, and then God slowly stretches us. He will stretch those steps of faith. They get bigger and bigger and bigger. And then you'll find yourself doing things you never dreamed you could do before. This is the transformation that God will do in your life, and it can actually happen pretty quickly. There were countless unseen battles out in the shepherd's field, although they were seen by God. And know this, that today's battles are God's preparation for an unknown future for you. Unknown to you, known to him. Will you faithfully fight in those battles? Will you faithfully take those steps of faith? Or will you chicken out, cowering on the hill like the Israelites? Trust in the promises of God. Keep your eyes locked on him, and he will grow you. He will give you strength. The kind of strength we see from David here. He says, you know, Yahweh who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the paw, same word, of this Philistine. Just another big animal trying to get God's sheep. I got this, Saul. And notice this too. He says, Yahweh rescued me, and Yahweh will rescue me. Notice just a few verses earlier, David says, I rescued the sheep. But he says, you know what really happened? God rescued me, and God will rescue me. Here we see man's part and God's part. David had to do something. He had to step out. God worked through him. And so on the one hand, David did it. But on the other hand, he's like, actually, it was God. God who did it. And because God has rescued me so many times as I've stepped out, he's rescued me, he's rescued through me, he will rescue me. I don't have to worry about this Philistine. I'll be fine. Notice too, he says a word we haven't seen yet in this chapter, the name of God, Yahweh. An important being that needs to be factored into a battle with a Goliath-sized problem. And I wonder if that kind of jogged Saul's memory. He's like, oh yeah, Yahweh, that guy. The one who anointed me king and did miracles for me and through my son Jonathan. Well, go and may Yahweh be with you. You're going to need him. But do you know what else you're going to need? Some more advice from me. My armor. He gave David his own armor. A bronze helmet and a coat of mail. This is classic expert helpful advice. He's like, oh, you're definitely going to need this. And he dresses David in his armor. Armor that didn't fit him. Saul was huge. David was still growing. And, you know, he's kind of dressing him up like a poor man's Goliath here. He's fighting Goliath with the same strategy that Goliath would use, the same way Saul would think. David's going to approach this completely differently through the eyes of faith. And so David's like, I guess. So he's kind of starts putting it all on and he's strapping the sword on. He's like, he's kind of trying to take a step, and he's trying to take another step. He had never worn things like these before. I can't go in these. I'm sorry. I'm not used to these. So he just politely, here's your armor back, Saul. I don't think I'll need that today. Well, this was just shaping up to be a disaster. But David, through the eyes of faith, things are looking a lot different. He successfully navigated the critic, the hateful critic, who's attacking him, attacking his motives, insulting him. He successfully navigated the expert who's telling him why it can't be done, why he's stupid for trying, giving him terrible advice for how to do it. He's politely turning away, politely steering through these distractions so he can get to the real battle. And now it's time for the main event. Again, this is what it would have looked like from the bottom of the valley of Elah. And David begins to slowly head down this several hundred foot tall, somewhat steep mountainside. So he's kind of making his way down. He's picking his way between trees and rocks. He's got a staff and a sling. I'm not sure David really knew what he was going to do when he started down that hill. But one thing I know for sure, he did not have any ammo. He had no bullets for that sling. The ammo was down in the valley. It was at the bottom of the hill. And sometimes you need to walk into the battle. You need to take that step of faith, not really knowing where it's headed. And what you will find is once you take the step, once you get down into the arena, that's when you will get everything that you need to win that battle. But you got to take the step of faith first. And so he makes his way down that hill. And it says he stops and picks up 5 smooth stones from a stream and puts them into the shepherd's bag. I mean, imagine the Israelites watching this. I wonder if you could have heard a pin drop at the top of that mountain as they watched one shepherd boy do what all of them, thousands, had failed to do for 40 days, morning and evening, making his way down that hill. What is Eliab thinking? Oh my God, my brother's going to die. I'm going to watch my brother get slaughtered by this giant. Imagine what the Philistines think. It's like they're looking across the valley. You know, it's a half a mile plus. And all of a sudden they see a speck making his way down that hill slowly. The speck stops at a stream, grabs something. The speck continues walking across the valley toward their giant. And the speck does not seem to be afraid. Armed only with the shepherd's staff and sling, he started across the valley to fight the Philistine. I don't know if Goliath had turned around. Remember, he had been taunting recently. Perhaps he had made it back to their side of the valley, perhaps partway up the hill, and turns and sees this boy. Goliath walked out toward David with his shield bearer ahead of him. And as Goliath got closer, I wonder if he just started looking up and up and up, more and more the angle of his head. As the sun was blotted out, facing this Goliath, who sneered in contempt at this ruddy-faced boy. You know, he's looking at things according to the outside. God looks at the heart. Am I a dog that you come at me with a stick? Woof, woof. Bow, wow. Do you want to play fetch? And he cursed David by the names of his gods. Come over here and I'll give your flesh to the birds and wild animals, Goliath yelled. And then David replied to the Philistine, you come to me with sword, spear, and javelin. You know, Goliath's like, you come at me with a stick? And David's like, you come at me with all the latest Bronze Age weapons technology? David's like, I don't have a sword or a spear or a javelin or a shield or a shield bearer or any armor. But you know what I got? I come armed with a name. The name of the Lord of Heaven's armies. The God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. David saw the armies that were there that day. And if Goliath and the Philistines had seen those armies, they would have turned tail and run a lot sooner. There were angelic armies all around. And those that are on David's side are a lot more than those that are on the other side. Today, Yahweh will conquer you. And I'll kill you and cut off your head. And then I will give the dead bodies of your men to the birds and wild animals. And the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. And everyone assembled here will know that Yahweh rescues his people, but not with sword and spear. This is Yahweh's battle, and he will give you to us. And then you're not going to believe what David does next. Goliath moves closer to attack, and David starts sprinting at the giant. Reaching into his shepherd's bag and taking out a stone, he hurled it with this sling. And those up on the hill, it's like at the baseball game where you see it hit, and then you hear the crack like a half second later. It hit the Philistine in the forehead, and the stone sank in. And you imagine Goliath kind of just stunned, teetering, and then like a mighty sequoia, just falling to the ground, stumbled and fell face down on the ground. And the Israelites are at the top of the hill, and they're like, I can't believe that just happened. Is this a trick? Is he playing dead? And the Philistines are way across the valley, and they're like, I can't believe that just happened. David doesn't miss a beat. Keeps running to Goliath, stands over him, reaches down, heaves the sword out of the sheath, and then boom, with all of his strength, cut off his head with the sword. And the Israelites are like, yeah, I think he's dead. When the Philistines saw that their hero was dead, they turned and ran, and the men of Israel and Judah surged forward with a shout, and the rest of the battle is history. The story of David and Goliath. Concluding thoughts. Wow. You know, it'd be nice if we could battle our giants like this. Let's just have it out. 20 minutes. Cut the head off. We're done. As scary as that is, we get it over with, right? But that's not the way it works. It's never that simple. And it's never that quick. And frankly, even for David, this victory was just the beginning. The Philistines are still there. And now, unfortunately, what he has are enemies even within Israel who are jealous of what he just did. People who are out to get him from both sides of the valley. And we'll find that as well. We take steps of faith. Some other people might get jealous. Create some friction in our relationships. Our battles will never stop in this life. Don't expect, well, once the fighting is done, the fighting's never done. You need to be into the fight, okay? It's not with swords and spears, but it's a battle. It's a spiritual battle. It's hard. We need to keep fighting. We need to keep hanging in there because the time of fighting actually is very short compared to the time that comes after, the time of rest. Today's battles are always God's preparation for the battles of tomorrow. How are you doing with the battles he's put in your path today? Are you faithful here? Do you see a vision for God doing more through you in the future? And as you face the giants, ask yourself, is God in your corner? It's only through Jesus Christ that we can get onto the right side here. Christ loved you so much, he died for you. He hung on a cross as punishment for your sins. And he offers salvation, eternal life, that he will always have your back, that he will never leave you nor forsake you no matter what you go through. And he will guide you and protect you the whole way through. He will guide all the suffering in your life and work it all for good. Is God in your corner? Do you need to make that decision tonight, that first step of faith? Secondly, where is your focus as you face these giants? Are you focused horizontally? Or do you need to do that swivel up and look at God, at the promises of God, to look at that third dimension that underlies everything that we do? You need to learn the promises of God and focus on where is God. And then the problems in your life will seem much smaller. And like David, you can say, man, this pipsqueak is defying our giant. Well, you put on the armor of faith, the armor of trust, the scripture, trust in his promises. Will you put on that spiritual armor that Christ offers and will you stand firm and fight? This is a call to fight. It's not going to get easier. Things will get harder as we get closer to the end of history, but it's worth it. God sees it all. God is sovereign over it all, and God will reward you for everything you do for him. And that is the end of our story here. Yeah, Lord, what a awesome picture of your character and your power here, Lord. I'm thankful for examples like David, Lord, people that just simply trust you, Lord, and it cuts through a lot of the anxiety, Lord. I pray that you would grow our view of you, that we would see you for the big and powerful God that you are. I'm thankful, Lord, that that's not over against the love and closeness either, because we see that from David as well, Lord. So I'm thankful that you're the God that's big and you're the God that loves and draws near. And I pray that that would be enough of a foundation to get us through the things that we're facing right now, Lord. I pray for people here who are tempted to give up the fight. I pray that they would not. I pray they would instead draw near to you, review your promises, keep their eyes more on you, and they would hang in there and trust that you know what you're doing, Lord. You're sovereign. You've allowed this to happen, and you got a purpose for this. And I pray for anyone that just has never come into a relationship with you, Lord. I pray they wouldn't go any longer like that. But I pray they would get that relationship, open the door as Christ knocks, and know that they're on the right side in this whole thing. Mm-hmm. Amen.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.